You walk into the city quietly. The morning air is still cool, carrying the faint scent of dust and olive leaves. Stone streets stretch before you, worn smooth by generations of feet. The city is awake now, but not hurried. Merchants are arranging tables. Pilgrims move in small groups, voices low. Something lingers from yesterday, an energy not yet settled, like echoes still hanging between the walls. You stay just behind the crowd, close enough to see, yet far enough to watch. He walks ahead, unhurried, not pushed by the crowd, but not lifted by it either. People notice him, then they look again. There's no show in his steps, no need to announce himself. He moves with a steadiness that feels deliberate, as though every footfall belongs exactly where it lands. You follow as he enters the temple courts. At first, everything seems normal. The familiar rhythm of trade and worship hums together. Coins clink. Animals shift and snort. Voices bargain and call out prices. The sound is constant, layered, practiced. It has been this way for a long time. But something changes when he stops. You feel it before anything happens, a tightening in the air, a quiet drawing inward, as if the space itself is holding its breath. He looks around slowly, not scanning, but seeing. His gaze rests on tables, on cages, on hands exchanging money. It lingers, not in confusion, but in recognition. This place was meant for prayer. You sense it in his stillness, a sorrow, steady and deep. Not explosive, not impatient, but grief, measured and awake. And then he moves. The first table tips with a sharp scrape against stone. Coins scatter, ringing and bouncing, breaking the practiced hum of commerce. Voices rise in surprise. And then another table overturns. A chair falls. Animals are released, startled but free, rushing toward open space. No rage drives him. What you see in him is clarity. His voice cuts through the chaos, strong, but not frantic. Words about prayer, about a house meant for communion, not transaction. You cannot miss the authority in his tone. Yet, it is not borrowed from position or title. It comes from somewhere deeper, somewhere that does not argue for itself. And people freeze. Some step back, some stare. A few bristle, offended, protective of what they have built. But many simply watch, caught between fear and awe, as if a long-ignored truth has finally spoken aloud. When the space clears, something unexpected happens. Children approach. They move toward him without hesitation, drawn by something they cannot name. The noise settles. The temple feels different now, open, lighter, the kind of quiet that comes after honesty. He kneels to them. He listens. He heals. You notice the way he touches people, how it is neither rushed nor distant. Each encounter seems complete, as though nothing else exists in that moment. Blind eyes open. Bent bodies straighten. Hope appears, not loud, but unmistakable. Ah, and then religious leaders arrive, stiff with concern, watching from a distance. Their faces hold calculation, not curiosity. They do not like this disruption. They do not like the way the people respond to him. They especially do not like the ease with which authority seems to rest on him. Yet he remains calm. Later, as the day wanes, he leaves the city. You follow again, walking the path toward Bethany. The sun lowers, warming the stone to gold. The noise of Jerusalem fades behind you now. Along the road, a fig tree stands in leaf, full and promising. He approaches it, searching for fruit. There is none. He pauses. His words are quiet, but they carry weight, not spoken in irritation, but in warning. A sign, you realize. Leaves without fruit. Appearance without life. Religion without surrender. The tree remains, but something has shifted. As evening settles, you finally hear his name spoken aloud among the small group gathered near him. Jesus, Yeshua. The name moves through you slowly. You reflect on the day, on overturned tables and gentle healing, on sorrow and authority woven together, on a holiness that refuses to stay polite when truth is at stake, yet never abandons compassion. You understand now that this was not an outburst. It was an unveiling. Holy Monday is not loud because it wants attention. It is loud because love has limits with falsehood. Because prayer matters. Because fruit matters. Because God does not ignore what misrepresents him. As night comes, you remain an observer, but not untouched. Something in you has been cleared. Something in you has been invited to bear fruit.